Just as a real brief introduction this morning, next week we're going to be talking about some specific aspects of the budget. So what we anticipate talking about next week in a very practical way are not necessarily ways that you can save money, but ideas and principles in the areas of purchasing of clothing, food, insurance, and transportation. Okay, so those are the four areas. And the next week we'll be talking about housing. Of course, that's not an issue with any of you, right? Because you only use like 10% of your income for your house and utilities. And then finding money you never knew you had, and then entertainment. So that's kind of the direction that we're headed the next couple of weeks. So let's begin our class this morning with a word of prayer. Our Father in Heaven, we thank you so very much that you have entrusted us with family and friends, an opportunity to worship you, lots of time and talents and abilities. We pray, Lord, that we'll use all the things that you've given us to your honor and glory in Christ's name. Amen. Okay, our goal, of course, is to become the best stewards that we can of the things that the Lord's entrusted to us. So just kind of something to help us to think through some of those, we have this little pretest. I got it from the book, A Mom's Guide to Family Finances by Ellie Kay. And I added some questions to it. But the ideas are pretty much just to help us to start the thinking process. So hopefully you answered this. If you get a 1, if this very rarely applies to you, you get a 10 if this always applies to you, and then you can put numbers kind of in the middle. So if you can go through and give yourself numbers for each of these, then you can add them up, and then we'll kind of discuss in just a moment the responses that L.A.K. gave to that. Oh, I have to find my book. Okay, number 1, do you currently live on a budget? Of course, most of you, that's a 10 because you're such good, frugal, disciplined people. And you know that budgets are the key to everything. And I know budgets are difficult, they're time-consuming, they cause us to have to stop and talk with each other and think through some difficult circumstances. My wife and I were walking around the block last night, and which we try to do almost every night. And it's because we have a puppy dog, and we know it's good for us to kind of walk around the block, and it gives us a chance to talk about things. We're talking, well, what can we cut back on our budget? Because we're redoing our budget, and we want to refine things. And so she said, well, we could give up, and then she kind of listed all these things that the things that we buy we really need, or at least we think we need. So can we really cut back? It's a difficult thing to do for all of us. And sometimes we have to make hard, difficult decisions. But if you're a couple, you can do it together. If you're a single person, you have the freedom to be able to do it. And if it doesn't work, make a quick change and nobody's going to get hurt but you. But we need to practice at our budget and continually refine it and rework it and redo it. And I don't know any other reads, I don't have them in front of me, but there's a whole series of reads that we can do so that we come up with something that works for us. So, do you currently live on a budget? Hopefully, eventually, that'll be a 10 for everybody. Do you consistently stick to your budget? Aha, is it a valuable tool? Do you buy something only because you really need it, not just because you want it? Do you give 10% of your income to the Lord's ministry? Do you routinely reconcile your checking account? And I know some of you are mischievous. So routinely means like a few times a month, not once a year. Okay, yes, I do it annually. That doesn't really count here. Okay. Do we have a total consumer debt load of less than 10% of your annual income? For example, if you make $50,000 a year, your debt on your credit card is not more than $5,000. Do you save at least 10% of your income? Do you maintain a savings account with a balance of 3 months' spendable income? And again, that allows us to become our own banker. And if we save 10% of our income, then we're going to be able to have that 3 month balance pretty soon. Something we can work toward. Do you regularly contribute to a retirement account such as a 401k, 403b, or a Roth IRA? Now, one of the nice things about these is that it takes money out before you're taxed on it. Therefore, it can lower the amount of taxes that you have to pay. So this can be a double-edged sword in a very positive way. Do you refrain from buying something immediately, even though a commercial convinces you to buy it? And remember the little rule here, if I just have to have this, it's so important that I buy this now, and I'm going to pick up my telephone, it's QVC, isn't that the name of it? The little TV show? Right, now I know who buys. Okay. If we have to pick up our phone and call into QVC and buy that thing, probably we shouldn't. We need to wait at least 24 hours, maybe 48 hours, and just kind of, do we really need that? Okay. Next. Do you and your spouse speak freely and openly about financial matters? This last week I was traveling with a business partner, and I found it real interesting that she was willing to go and spend weekends with her boyfriends, but she wouldn't let them know how much money she made. And I'm thinking, you know, where are your priorities? It's real funny. When we ask people to talk about dollars, sometimes it's really difficult. And sometimes in our marriage relationships, it's real difficult for us to talk about money. So we need to do whatever causes us not to be able to talk freely about money. We need to break down those barriers so that we can make wise decisions. Can you truthfully say you have never impulsively purchased a car or major appliance? Can you truthfully say, have you been free from past due notices during the last 12 months? You pay off the balance of your credit card each month so you do not have to pay the finance charge. And here's my little rule, and that's this. If you didn't pay off your credit card at the end of the month, then you lose the privilege for using it next month. Just a little rule of thumb. So take it and put it in some ice. Okay, i.e. put it in some water in a little bag and then put it in the refrigerator, and then it freezes and you don't really have access to it. You haven't damaged it, but if you go to the store and you want to use that credit card, it takes a lot. You have to come home, take it out of the freezer, and bang the thing out of there, and by then you say, oh, it's not worth it. So if you don't pay it off, you can't use it. Now, if you do that for several months and you're just not able to pay it off, then maybe it's a good idea to take the scissors to it. Okay, until you can tell yourself, okay, I'm a responsible person. Or put it in a safety deposit box or give it to somebody. Okay, somebody that won't use it. Okay, does the level of your overall debt allow you to rest easy at night? Are you arguing about dollars? Then we need to solve the problem. If you're having difficult sleeping at night, then we need to work through the problems. Now let me share with you some of the results that the author of this book ended up with. She said, if you added these up and you were less than 45, you're in the greatest need category and have all the characteristics of a born spender who has never made any modifications in his or her financial habits. If you haven't filed for bankruptcy yet, it is possible you will do so within the next 2 years unless you change. Okay, if you're between 45 and 75, you're below average in your savings tendencies, you are likely to have a large amount of credit card debt and are headed down the path of financial despondency. 75 to 95, if you are like a typical American family, you are somewhat content with the status quo but believe your family's financial situation will somehow right itself on its own. And it will, right? Everything just kind of works out, correct? Don't think so. Okay. No, it doesn't. We have to work hard at this thing. All right, between 95 and 120, at least one of the partners in this family is likely a born saver with the ability to influence a household budget and other financial aspects in the house. This person may know many of the right things to do financially, but could still lack some of the accountability to follow through on in specific areas. Okay, and 120 to 145, you have great financial situation and outlook. However, you are in danger of becoming out of balance in your financial situation because you save too much. Okay, I'm not with her there. And then number 150, if you can honestly say that you have balance and are still generous with your money, then you might want to consider mentoring others to help them in these critical areas. And let me encourage you. get yourself in a situation where you know you have your act together. There are a lot of Christian brothers and sisters who would love to have you be able to say to them, we were in some financial trouble and we worked our way through it, and now we have some insights. They'd love to hear from you. It'd be really nice to have financial partnership and accountability with somebody. So there is a ministry in this, and let me encourage you to think of that as a potential activity. Okay. The scriptures have a lot to say about personal finance, and in the books that I've been reading, what I've found is that in general, people say that 16 of Christ's parables deal directly with money, finance, things that we value. One out of every 7 verses in the New Testament and 1 out of 6 verses in the Old Testament has something to do with this subject. More is said about money than about heaven and hell. 5 times more is said about money than about prayer. And of course, prayer is a very significant thing. Now, let's say, wait a minute. Bryce is standing up front. Guys up front always exaggerate. And I do. I exaggerate sometimes. So let's say I'm 50% wrong. So instead of 1 out of 7, it's 1 out of 14 verses in the New Testament. Instead of 1 out of 6 verses, it's 1 out of 12 verses in the Old Testament. That's still a lot about money, okay, and value and those things. Why do you think the Bible has so much to say on this subject? Speak.
Yeah, because like money is involved in everyday life, you can't escape that. If you don't want to look at your spiritual life and you want to ignore things, money is a way to kind of force you to look at your spiritual life.
So if I understand where I'm spending my money, I can better focus in on my spiritual life. I'll better understand my spiritual life, is right?
Yes.
If I'm putting more into Atlantic City than into 10th Presbyterian Church, that's a reflection of something. Okay, that doesn't apply to any of you. Anybody else over here have any insights, comments? Okay. Nobody's ever called you that before, have they? That's because they're ladies and gentlemen. All right, Matthew 6, 25 through 27. Now, I may have a little bit of redundancy between this class and what I said 2 weeks ago, and that's because I'm trying to emphasize a point. Okay, so bear with me. Matthew 6, 25 through 27 says, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they? Who of you, by worrying, can add a single hour to his life? Therefore, what we really should do is quit our job, go home, kick back, because God's going to take care of us, right? Anybody want to comment?
No.
No, okay. What's wrong with what I just said?
There's a huge difference between faith and laziness.
Faith and laziness, okay. What do birds do? They get up early in the morning, do they not? And they fly off, and what do? First of all, they go out and they get twigs and mud and styrofoam and all those other things that they use to make their little nest. And they make themselves a little nest. And then they go and they make little babies. And then they go out and find worms and bugs and whatever else and bring them home. They're busy working all the time. So they're doing their part. So if we're to be like the birds of the air or take that those dynamics into consideration here, we need to do our part in working diligently and working smartly. Okay, now we happen to have something above birds. Now birds have instinct, and so they know what to do. but we have intelligence. So one of the things that we can do is we can say, God's given us these resources. We can use it. We can allocate these in a very intelligent way so that we don't have to. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life. Who's going to put us in a situation so we don't have to worry? Us. It's up to us to make wise decisions, to find out everything we can about personal finance and anything else that pertains to that, what's of value to us, where we want to be in 5 or 10 years, and therefore make wise decisions so we don't have to worry. So say, yes, Jesus will take care of me. That's true. He's doing it right now. He's giving us the knowledge so that we, or the opportunity to gain the knowledge so that we can make wise decisions. So there's a great deal on us. Part of this worry and anxiety is seen in families, and according to the books I've been reading, 55 to 65% of the typical family arguments are over money. In 90% of divorces, money is a very significant issue, and in over half of all divorces, it's the significant issue that brought it about. Okay, so are we setting ourselves up for wise, happy marriages, good relationships? We need to make sure that we act intelligently and responsibly. So the ideal is not to have to worry or think about money, but to live life without it being a predominant part of our thinking. Proverbs 38:9, that is a 9 up there, says, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, I may have too much and disown you and say, who is the Lord? Or I may become poor and steal and so dishonor the name of my God. So we need to figure out what is the right balance for us. And as when we figure out what that lifestyle is based upon what our budget is, then we need to do what Proverbs 16:3 says, commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. Why will your financial plans for your family succeed? Because they're based upon good, solid principles. Okay, godly principles, and we're making sure that the budget decisions that we make, and it could be that you're living in 2/9 of a house. Maybe you need to sell your house and move to a trailer in the desert. I don't know. Hopefully not. Now, I was in the airplane the other day, and I, you know, how they hand out newspapers and stuff. My hotel gave me this little newspaper, and I was reading it. It's the U.S. News and World Report, and it listed the salaries for certain people in our society. I thought you might be interested in it. If this applies to any of you, please raise your hand. Best paid CEOs. Barry Diller, who runs Interactive Corporation. Last year, his compensation, total compensation package, was $295,136,000. Anybody here in that ballpark? Nobody. Okay. You all have all heard of Yahoo? Okay, his salary is only $600,000. But with all the little extras, he makes $182 million in 2005. Okay, let's see, Capital One. You've seen the Capital One cards, right? The guy who runs that, he made $249,420. So, you know, what's balance? I don't know. But, you know, I'd love for the Lord to test me. Okay. We have to keep in mind Matthew 25:14-30. We talked about that before. That's the parable of the talents. We are God's servants. He gives us certain things. We are supposed to be caretakers of whatever He gives us. Okay? It could be that this year you're only going to make $3,000, or you're going to be making $300 million. Regardless of what God gives us, that's what we're responsible for, and we're supposed to be faithful with that. And sometimes it's difficult. Sometimes we put ourselves in that difficult situation, and sometimes it's just where we ended up. And the Apostle Paul, of course, said that we're to be content in whatever situation we find ourselves. So we need to say, I'm content where I am right now. Not necessarily satisfied. I may want to change things so I get out of this situation, but let's not worry. Let's just act wisely right now. So God owns all things. We are only His managers, and He expects us to be responsible with the things that He's entrusted to us. We're not supposed to worship the money, but we're supposed to glorify the Lord. So, now we've been talking about budgets. What is a budget? Anybody here have any idea? Anybody here an accountant? Are you an accountant? You smile. You didn't smile. Do you have any idea what a budget is?
It's a framework by which you decide and allocate resources.
A framework by which you decide and allocate resources.
Resources that you need to attain whatever you want.
Are you in education?
I'm a student.
Okay, that was a very excellent answer. Anybody else? There has to be some other definitions. Yes?
Plan for spending.
A plan for spending. That's very practical. Okay. Somebody else, give me a definition. Yes?
A plan for not spending.
Wow, that's great. Okay. A plan for not spending. Okay. Somebody else? One more? Go ahead, Keith. Tell me your definition.
I don't mix with everybody. I guess more or less like a guideline for how you're going to go about expenses in your life.
Okay, a guideline for expenses. We're all kind of coming up with the same answer. Now, I'm going to give you an answer that when I first heard it, it completely blew me away, and I said, you're out of your mind. And it's this word right up here, freedom. Now, think about that for a minute. How can a budget that keeps us from spending the money the way that we want to, which is on all these little daily things when we walk through the store, I want that, and I'll take that, and I'll take that. We can't do that if we have a realistic, workable budget, and yet it provides freedom. Well, it does several things. One, it frees us from worry. If we have a realistic, workable budget, we can sleep at night. We don't have to worry about anything as far as finances are concerned. So should we be motivated to have a good budget? I would think just so that we don't have to worry about anything would be a good thing. Another thing, it allows us to choose. How do we know what we can buy if we don't know what resources we have? Do we get the Yugo or the Maybach? I don't know. Anybody here know what a Maybach is?
Car.
It's a car, yeah. How much does it cost?
$75,000.
How much?
$75,000.
No, maybe $750,000, but not $75,000. No, but that's okay. Yeah, they cost a lot of money. Okay, the most expensive production car you can buy. So, how do we know what we can buy? Well, we have to know what our budget is so we can make some choices. And it gives us freedom of control over our life. I don't know about you, but there's so many parts of my life I don't have control over. But with the budget, we can say, I want to live in this kind of a home. So I'm going to put this amount of money or percentage of my budget in this area. And then I'm not going to have enough maybe for a really nice car, but I choose the nice house. Or maybe I choose the nice car instead of the house. Or it gives us the opportunity to make decisions. So, yes, it does provide for us freedom. Now, another question for you. How about financial bondage? Anybody here ever been in? No, I won't ask that. What's financial bondage? Debt?
Debt.
Why is debt financial bondage? There was something I said. Yes,
do it. We're being controlled by someone outside of ourselves. We have to demand on us.
Sure. People have demands on us. If the creditor calls every week or twice a week or whatever, and you're worried about, you know, I can't open the door. I don't know who's going to be there. I don't want to answer the telephone. They're going to call our ID. We're fighting about money. I'm always thinking about it. Then we're in financial bondage. We need to make sure that we set ourselves up so that's never an issue in our life. And if you have kids or are going to have kids, so it never becomes an issue in their lives. Just be responsible. Thank you. So let's talk about a budget right now. Okay. You have each been given a little handout that shows what a budget is. And what I hope you have been able to do since you received one a couple of weeks ago is you've been able to go in there and start putting some of the numbers in there. And the way that we fill in a budget appropriately is, number one, we start with the known. We know certain things need to go into that budget. So we know what our mortgage is, and we know what our heating bill generally is. We know what our insurance is going to be each month. We know what our car payment or bus tokens, whatever it is that we use for transportation. We know what those numbers are. So we put in the known. Then we look at things from past experience. Go through and look at the checkbook over the last year and say, whoa, during this month I haven't spent a lot in this area. During this month I spent a lot less. Why did that happen? You know, maybe it has to do with utilities, or has to do with the fact that Christmas comes, and Christmas is a real expensive time that we don't always plan ahead for. If we don't plan ahead for it, it sneaks up on us, and then come May, we're still paying off Christmas. And that's no fun to do. Number three is look at the experience of others. There's nothing wrong with having an accountability partner that we go to and we talk to, particularly somebody a little older than us who's already been where we are in our season in life, and ask them some questions about, you know, what did you do at this particular time? And I really like the idea of accountability partners when you just say to somebody, for the next 30 days or 60 days, let's meet once a week and talk about our budgets and finance and how we spend. Okay. I also want to share one other thing. And that is, there's certain things that sneak up on us. And, for example, for me, it's automobile insurance. For you, it might be Christmas, or it might be vacation, or, you know, there's all these little things that sneak up on us, and all of a sudden you have this big bill. One thing that we can do is each month, we can take a sheet of paper and list all those little things that sneak up on us. And then in a column, we can put how much that's going to be, we think, next year. And then we can put down in another column when we think it's going to be due, and then start putting money away toward that. We can have a savings account that has a whole bunch of money in it, and it'll look to us like, whoa, I'm rich. But the fact is, you've already allocated all that money for these different activities. So when you look at it in a realistic way, you go, whoa, wait a minute, I have $4,000 in there. That sounds really good, but that covers automobile insurance and my vacation next summer. Therefore, it really isn't all that much. Okay? So plan ahead so that we don't have to go out and borrow some money in order to pay for something, or make our insurance in time payments or something like that. Again, that's part of being your own banker. Now, when it comes time to put together your budget for the first time, it's always important to budget on the high side. Okay? Don't give yourself the benefit of the doubt. Oh, it will just be cool this winter. Okay? We'll turn it down to 55. You know? Goldfish won't die. Well, you know, and it's nice when you're talking and you see your breath, you know you're alive. That's great. But budget on the high side. My wife and I, a few years ago, lived in a little tiny house, and we went and had a new house built. It was twice as big, and we had electric heat in our first house. In our new house, we had gas heat. So we thought, okay, the heating bill is going to double. Well, we budgeted on the high side, moved into the new house, and lo and behold, it was actually less. We were so happy because electric heat is very expensive to run, and gas heat is very inexpensive comparatively. That was the good news. The bad news was, they said, oh yeah, your taxes would be like, I don't know, $900 a year, no problem. Well, we live in New Jersey, okay? So when it gets a bill for $3,000, we're going, oh, okay, aren't we glad that we budgeted high in some areas, because then reality hit, and that realtor who just wanted us to get into the house, that was his goal, he wanted his commission, you know, didn't happen to necessarily tell us everything the way that we needed to hear it. So also, when it comes to our budget, we go through and we count up all the little percentage marks. If you're like minus 10%, what do? You just go, God will take care of this, right? Yeah, it's okay. Correct? Who can deficit spend? There is someone that can deficit spend. What's his name? Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam, yes. Good old Mr. Federal. Okay, he can deficit spend, but since we're not, you know, really related to him, then we have to make sure that it always equals zero at the end. Okay, one of the little tools you have right here is called Percentage Guide for Family Income. And if you ever see me with my wife, you go up and congratulate her and say, thank you very, very much. Because she's up working on this at 2 o'clock in the morning, okay, to make sure that it all came together. And we learned Excel on Apple together. It's different than PC Excel. But what she did was, the numbers I had on my old sheet are a little different than this, simply because the taxes have changed in the last couple of years. But if you make $14,600 or less, you don't have to pay any tax. But if you make $14,600, then you have to pay 10% tax. If you make $59,400, you have to pay 15% tax. $119,000, well, you can read. But it shows the percentage that you have to pay. Now, you'll notice there's an asterisk there, and for state tax and in Pennsylvania and in New Jersey, they're a little bit different, so we didn't put the actual numbers in there. And some of you lucky people have city tax, right? So you get to pay for the mayor's limo. Good for you. Okay, so you get that privilege. But here's some percentages for you, and these are all based upon some of the material that we've been reading over the last couple of years. And primarily, for example, savings should be about 5%. Depending on your income, the automobile will be a certain percentage, your food will be a certain percent, etc. And if you'll notice, the opportunity to make investments only comes if you're able to take care of your basic needs. Okay? So we need to think about that. Bottom line for all this is you are the responsible adult who has to make the decision on how much really goes in. So it may be that we say you're supposed to be putting in 5% in investments, but in fact, that's an important thing for you. You want to be able to retire someday. So you're going to put 15% in there. If you put 15% in there, then that's going to impact other areas of your life. Okay, it all equals 100%, not 110%. So this is a guideline for you. One of the authors I was reading recently established some steps for establishing a realistic budget. And the book said this: set goals, a roadmap for what you want to accomplish. Okay? What do you want to accomplish? Where is your family supposed to be in 3 years, or 5 years, or 10 years? And a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the GAP, set a goal, analyze your situation, and make a plan for the future. So if we've already done that, then we can make our budget so that it supports where we want our family to be headed. Then, check our current spending. And go to the checkbook and see where we're spending our money, and use that cash flow record that we have. And I put some of those in the back wall or back chairs for you also, so we can see where we're actually spending our cash. Now, it could be, and somebody asked me this last week, they said, all right, if I'm using my credit card for certain areas, should I write that down in my little cash flow sheet? And absolutely. If you use your credit card to spend some money on gasoline, write that down in your book. Because then you'll be able to allocate specifically where you're spending your money. And that's what that spreadsheet is all about, is to help us know where our money's going. And then put it all in your budget. That's draft one. Then we're going to do it again next month. And next month, until we get it right. And we have to remember that it's a living organism. It always changes, because our needs change, our life continually changes. So we'll need not always to keep look at our budget every single month, but we do need to make sure that we know where it is and check in on it every couple of months. I have this little thing, it's called a budget review. Did you get one of these? What this does is, and you can modify this any way that works for you, and if you do find a better way, please let me know. In the first column, it lists all the basic items that are in the budget that I handed out earlier. Okay, so you put in the amount that you put in your budget, then you live your month. Then you put down how much did I actually spend. Ooh, is there a difference? If there's a difference, write that down. Then the question is this significant? It could be this just a fluke. It doesn't matter. Okay. It could be that it isn't a fluke. It could be that this is going to start being a trend. If it's going to be a trend, then we want to change our budget, and we put numbers over there. So this is just a little tool to make sure that our budget really does work. Oh, you know what? The last thing that she said, once you create your budget and you find that you're able to stick to it, she put, reward yourself. Set funds aside to do something or own something when you reach your goal. Those kind of none of you have ever had to worry about weight, I know. But for those of us who have had to go on diets, the ones that seem to be successful are the ones in which we reward ourselves when we reach certain goals. You know, I've lost 15 pounds and I'm going to go out and on Saturday night I can eat anything I want and I'm going to a really nice restaurant. It's a reward. It's something to look forward to. Okay. So to reward ourselves, say, hey, you know, there's that coffee table I wanted to buy over at the thrift shop, so I'm going to go over and I'm going to pick it up. Or, you know, that little BMW, I'm going to buy that as a little reward. Whatever it happens to be for you and your financial income. Okay? So just to reward ourselves. So we need to continually revise it and continually change it. And sometimes, and I've heard of this before, a couple will sit down and become committed to a budget. This is what we're going to stick with. And because it, what we think it's supposed to be is always a little bit different, then it causes all kinds of struggles within the family because we say, we've committed to this budget for the next year. I'm not going to move. Well, without flexibility with one another, it just creates tension. You have to make sure that it's living and we're able to adjust it. Shoot for 80% accuracy the first time. If you make 80% accurate, you've done a great job. Okay. I also have another little worksheet that some of you will find helpful, and it's this one. It's the yearly planning. And what you can do with this is you can sit down and list in all the different areas. You can do it once a month, or do it when you're doing your taxes and you want a break. But you go through and write what you want to do. Is each month of the year is listed your each of the items. And what it does is it gives you an opportunity to be able to say, you know, what's your utilities look like? I noticed that in March, April, and May, my utilities for heating and cooling are a lot lower than August and September when we turn on the air conditioner, or January and February where we turn up the heat. Okay, how's that going to influence your budget? Well, if in May you go, ooh, I have all this extra money in my checkbook, I don't know why, and you start living up to that level, because remember, our living lifestyle grows to meet the level of the income that we have. It's a wonderful phenomenon in this world. So if we do that, then if we see the trends, we know that, in fact, because we have a little extra right now, it's not going to be there in the future, then that'll help us to make some wise decisions, okay? Christmas is going to show up on this, birthdays, vacations, and just, it's just a little tool to help keep us out of trouble. Now, let's do this in imagination. Jim and Jean got married. They're living happily ever after. Everything is going wonderful for them. And then the most incredible thing, happiest thing in the world, happens to them. They're just elated. But financially, it's going to kill them. What do you think that is? Pardon?
Having a child.
Have you had a child? She's had two wonderful children. I've seen them running around the place. Okay. Why would having a baby has any impact upon a family's budget? I have no choice. You've been there, done that, huh? Okay, the big question, yes?
We think at first we won't have that much stress. We get all this clothes, you know, you can leave, share, you get all this stuff. We think we don't need a thing. And then we find out, you know, well, we really do need things. We're going to get cheap. And then, you know, within they're eating, you have to see them, and I wasn't in that position, you know, you have to buy food for 6 months,
but then food, not cheap to get a little thing like this, and plus, oh, fuck, for yes. Eat sick leave in a day. Yes, let's see, 6 times 7 okay, yeah. And diapers, I still understand that. I used to just put things in the backyard. Come on. But, yeah, babies are very expensive. And then there's also the thing of, what are we going to do as far as income? If mom and dad were both working ahead of time, should mom stay home now? How did we prepare for that? Is she going to work? Then who's going to take care of the baby? And is daycare going to cost? And there's, you know, there's a whole lot of issues. It's important for us to think of that ahead of time and to make plans. And we're all going to end up making different decisions. So what the decision you make isn't right and it's not wrong, but it's the decision that you have intelligently worked out so that it fits your budget. Okay? A friend of mine, what he did was when they got married, they just looked on his salary with the idea that we'll use her salary to buy furniture and get a down payment for a house and to put a bunch of money away in the bank. And then when babies came along, they continued to live on his salary and were it wasn't such a traumatic event for them. But that's not an option for everybody. So you just have to think of what are the alternatives that'll work for me. Okay? So, anyhow. It says here, precious treasures and oils are in the house of a man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours all he has. It's to our advantage, as we're going through this whole process, to make sure that we always put money in savings, and that we have real good control over our dollars. Malcolm McGregor, he's a CPA and Christian counselor, he authored the book, Your Money Matters and Training Your Children to Handle Money. He said, and this I found to be real interesting, I've counseled hundreds of couples and I've never met a couple with good financial records who is in financial trouble. Think about that. We're talking about self-discipline. If you're self-disciplined enough to take care of your records, probably you're self-disciplined enough to make sure that you stick with them. He also said, I've never met a couple in financial trouble who has more than a vague notion of how they're spending their money. Okay? So one on one hand, one on the other. So it's up to us to be responsible and use the tools the Lord's given to us. And I have a thing here from a Harvard Business Study that shows the same thing about businesses. Businesses are successful when they have their act together. If they don't know where their finances are, they tend to fall apart. One of the things you need to keep in mind, too, is when a bill comes in, it has an owner. Every bill has an owner. So you have to decide who owns that so it can get paid. Okay. Now you may want to give that person a little bit of freedom. I like the little philosophy of same day in, same day out. Now some people say, well, wait a minute. If the bill comes in and it's not due for 20 days, I don't want to give that company my money. I want to keep it in my bank. Well, okay, that's good. And you know, do that as long as you're disciplined enough to make sure that you get it paid off in time. If there's any question in your mind that you might not be able to make that deadline, or you just want the peace of mind of knowing the darn thing's paid, then pay it the day that it comes in, and then you don't have to worry about it anymore. I have a little cube. See, in our house we have these little cubes. Okay, these are little tiny things, just enough to put envelopes in. And I love it when I pull it out and I'm looking through and I find a bill that's like 60 days old. This really makes me real happy. But that happens sometimes if I don't use that little principle of same day in, same day out. So I just use that to keep myself out of trouble. Second thing is both parties should know how to keep the books. They should know where all the bills are. I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. Everybody in your family, husband and wife, if you're married, needs to know any kind of insurance that you might have and how the premiums are paid, where your will is. And all the financial things. So if something bad happens to you, then your spouse is taken care of. But if somebody says, you're always messing up the checkbook, I'll take care of it. Okay, if they say that, that can be a bad thing if something happens to them. You're really going to be a hypocrite. So it's to your advantage to say, I want to understand where the money's going so I can have peace of mind. And I want you to love me enough to give me the peace of mind that I need so that I don't have to go through a trauma if something really bad happens to you. And that actually happened to one of my wife's friends. Her sister died, and she always took care of all the books. And her husband was Mr. I've got a backhoe. I'm going to go out and go around the neighborhood and dig holes. He was, you know, Mr. Macho. And she died, and he had no clue where anything was. So he went through the trauma of losing a wife, and then of having all kinds of financial problems as a result of that. Okay. Now, as far as a checkbook, did we talk about checkbooks here? Who should? How many checkbooks should you have? One checkbook or two? You remember? In a family of a married couple, how many checkbooks? If you really love me, then you make sure that we only have one checkbook as we share everything, right? I want my independence, therefore, I love you, but I want my own checkbook. Right? Which is right? What do you mean, both?
What if it works for you as a couple? You can just share what you just shared about the fact that, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, responsible and yet both, every family's different, and so it's really what works for you as a couple. There's no right or wrong in that area.
Anybody disagree with this young lady? He disagrees.
Yeah.
He's single. Share your wisdom.
Well, wisdom. I think you should have an idea of where your spouse is spending money. And if she has her own private account, or he does, whatever, you can't really know. You know, if he's going to the track every Friday night when you should be shopping for groceries, you need to put sort of tabs on where the money's going.
Ooh, okay.
I agree that each partner, that each partner has a desire to, yes, I want to go get a burger, Burger King, or whatever. I don't have to call and say, honey, I'm sick, or whatever. But I think it's important to communicate with each other that they want to spend money. I think even more than just budgeting your money, I think you make yourself open to sin, yes, accounts to each other, no doubt.
Okay, so what are some things that you can do to make sure that you really do know what the other person is? Have the other person, they balance their checkbook to the penny, you round off to the nearest 10. So probably if you both keep the same checking account, you're going to be at each other's throats. So you want that person to have theirs, you want to have yours, but you want to have this trust factor. How do you work that out?
We in our case, and I'm saying it's the only way to do it, we have one checkbook in there. And when you first said that, I said to myself, besides paying bills, who writes checks? Really? And you got Mac machines, you got a Mac card, you got cash.
Uh-huh.
Maybe that's just the way I.
Okay.
You know, I don't write checks to the grocery store. I give, she does the books, and I give her a receipt every time I spend something. Which, in my case, I don't tend to spend a lot of money. But.
Okay. Jody has something to say.
In our situation, we decided early on to have spending money. When my husband is paid, we should get spending money. So we're not having to keep track of every little thing the other person spends money or, you know, what they do with it. And in our case, that works out nicely. So, you know, it's really not practical to talk every day about money. Especially if you have children and, you know, a lot of things going on. Or, my husband was working shift work, and we didn't really want to talk about money in 15 minutes that we had before, you know, like, we got home. It just made it a lot more practical.
Okay.
We also built a little miscellaneous fund in, which either of us can pull from, and that was very good. So I think if you build those things into your budget, then you're not going to be fighting over incidental things.
Okay, now some important things that she brought up was having your own spending money. Isn't it great to have to go to your husband or wife and say, honey, you have some money if I can buy you a gift? Isn't that just great? Okay, we need to make sure that our relationship is such that we each have our own spending money so we can tuck some away, so we can buy something, whatever we want, a little bit of freedom. Also, something you mentioned about, honey, I'm at the McDonald's, I'm going to buy a hamburger, it's like $1.99, what do you think? I don't want to have to do that. But if together you've decided, okay, anything that we spend above $25 or $50, or if you're like one of these CEOs, anything above $4 million, you're going to call the person and say, hey, you know, I'm looking at this electric drill, I'm not sure if I want to buy it or not, or if I should buy it or not. What do you think? But anything above that number, but anything below that, you have the freedom to go ahead and make a decision. But you as a couple have to decide, what's that number? What's the one that works for me? Okay, sir.
We do it that way, and a mechanism that's worked well for us is that we have our main checking account with our credit union I've been with for eons. But when we got to Philadelphia, we opened up a convenience account with Wachovia, which happened to have an ATM in our building. Mm-hmm. And so we electronically allocate so much money out of our main account every month into the ATM account, which we call the money tree. And okay. The rule is, whoever needs to shake the money tree is free to shake it, no explanation is required. But, you know, when the money tree is empty, that's it.
Okay. Okay. I'm going to hit on that money tree in just a minute, too. Okay.
What? I was thinking the difference is, in general, we all agree that it's some, however you do it, you need to communicate with each other in general, where
money's going. Trust is so important.
You get married in one flesh, yeah. I mean, includes your checking.
If you can't see my checkbook, we have a marital problem to see, and we need to work through it, okay? We need to be willing to share everything with that other person. You have two separate checking accounts, that's fine. You both need to be on the checking account. And we, and you know, nowadays you can go online and see what the other account balances are. That's a good thing, all right? So communication is open. But if each person had, you know, in our little house, my wife buys the food. If I were to buy the food, then I go up and I look at all the sugars and I go, she said to get 5 pounds. She did this. And she said, 10 x of sugar, right? So obviously, 10 pounds of sugar, right? Well, there's a thing called 10 x sugar. I had never heard of it. So I walk in, you know. Do you ever go into the grocery store and see us guys just saying, yes, honey, I'm on the bus? It's just natural for some people to buy certain things. That should be their part of the budget, okay? So, yeah.
And I have two friends who had a very difficult struggle in their marriage. They thought that they were... They had one checkbook. They thought that they were openly communicating with one another about their finances. And it came out after like a year that he was spending hundreds of dollars a month on things that he should not have been spending money on. And it was just kind of, you know, just kind of got by. Like, she saw the checkbook and she could look at the bills, but there was the lack of true communication. So even if you do have one checkbook, it doesn't mean that everything's going to be okay. So there can still be a lack of accountability.
If you want to be sneaky.
You think that everything is right. If you want something,
yes,
you can go out and get it.
Yeah. Doesn't matter how many checkbooks you have. If you want to be sneaky, you'll be able to figure out a system to get around. So if we want good, healthy relationships, we need to work on that together as a couple. There's a little thing that I really like, and I've used a lot. Can anybody tell me about this little system here? And there's real money in it. Is this food? For this particular, look at this. They have a great mental budget. My daughter put this in. So this envelope has food. This one says clothing. And this one says recreation. I'm sure. How does this system work? Let us.
Allocate your money for each category and take it out.
What do you do when it comes empty and it's, you know, the second week of the month and you get paid monthly? What do? You have some of these, so you can reach into one of these. But that means that it's going to impact on recreation or it's going to impact on clothing. Okay. But the bottom line is, and don't be afraid to use the envelope method or the jar. Remember the cookie jar, the famous cookie jar that Grandma had? There's nothing wrong with having that. I used to do this where I like to landscape around the house. So I used to put money in for shrubs and, you know, mulch and all that fun stuff that I like. And then I would know, this is the money I have available to be able to do that. Maybe your hobby or your recreation or something. But this is not a bad system. It'll keep you out of trouble. If you find that at the end of the month it's just not working together, maybe you need to go on a highly cash system, at least for a while, until things start falling together in a better way. Yeah?
Is it okay to have, like, a golfing envelope?
A golfing envelope, absolutely. She is the key. That is true. One thing to do, too, is once you get a budget together and it looks realistic and workable, then it is to your advantage to put it in a place that you'll see it. Not necessarily all your guests that walk in the house, the person you see on the coffee table is your budget. But you have it someplace so you can refer to it, and it's a reminder to you that these are where the numbers are supposed to go. So each day as you kind of walk by and you look at it and say, oh, I need to fine-tune that a little bit because I'm discovering that I need to buy more of a particular item than what I had originally anticipated. And we'll continually fine-tune it until we make it work for us. We also need to make sure that we're willing to invest the time and energy into our budget, because it is the heart and key to making sure that our finances are correct, and we need to be willing to stick to it. And some people like me, I'm not a number cruncher. I don't like to do that at all. I like the big picture. And unfortunately, my wife's kind of the same way. Therefore, we have to work real hard at making sure that we have something. We don't, you know, that yearly thing I put out there, that's never going to happen in my house. Okay? I think it's a great tool. It's a wonderful tool. But I'm not going to do it. Okay? If it fits you and your personality, you should do it. Okay? And you'll be wiser as a result of that. Okay? A budget should work for you. You shouldn't work for your budget. A budget should not be considered an unpleasant chore, but a provider of freedom. Okay. Some other insights that we have here, and that is when we look at our little budget, we need to make sure that we determine the income that's right for us, and we talked about that in previous weeks. We have to, together as a couple, say, what is our income going to be, and then make a plan of action so that we are able to have that amount of money and make the sacrifices. And if we look at the sacrifices that we have to go through to have that kind of income and the impact that that has upon our whole total balanced life, it may be that we'll make some changes in our decision of what that income is. But we need to make sure that it's a conscious decision. My wife told me last night, she was reading from somebody, and what they said that for the amount of money you should live on is you should take your gross and then just figure out 60% of that gross and try to live on that. Everything else goes for savings and for taxes and for investments. I thought that was a real interesting concept.
When you do all your budget and, you know, the church is 10% of the gross, there are times, like in church, that we have other giving sides of time. So how do you budget for that? Like, why do you want to give a certain amount for the Easter sacrificial offering? How do I budget? Does that come into the 3 months from me?
No, yeah, that you could either reach into your 3 months that you have in savings when something comes up and pull it out and then repay yourself. Another thing is to say Easter usually comes once a year. So since it's going to come and we're going to have Easter sacrificial giving, why don't I take some money each month and put it, you know, put a little line, it goes into the big pot, and I have it listed here that a certain amount of that big pot is, each month, is designated toward that sacrificial giving. Therefore, you're able to do that, and it's not a sacrifice. You've planned ahead, and you can act wisely. Okay? Yes.
That little slip that you just said, or what you just said, is a very big question of mine.
Okay.
If you do responsibly plan for your giving, how do you make sure, spiritually, that you keep it sacrificial giving? It asks us to figure out what that really means, but that's sacrificial.
Very interesting. Could it be that you are cutting back, let's say you're going to give 1% of your income toward the sacrificial giving, does that mean that all year long you're going to be living 1% less as far as luxuries that you would have if you hadn't put that in? Or do we want to wait for the big bang and really feel it because we gave 12%? So, a little or less. Okay. I wasn't sure I was going to handle that when you started talking. Okay. On the sheet that we have where it shows the different percentages, another area happens to have to do with savings. And on most of them, I believe it says 5%. Yes, it says 5%. So that's part of that, putting money away so we can borrow from ourselves and help give us a nice little comfort zone. It's for future purchases. We also have a little thing here as far as investments and savings that I have as a handout. It's called the annual investment chart. Do you see that? What this is it's a little tool. So if you say, okay, I'm going to retire in 10 years and I need $1 million. Therefore, and you will need $1 million if you want to retire. Okay? You should stop and think, how much money do you need for an income? And if you have money stuck away, getting interest, how much money do you really need to have stuck away so that you can live off it? Sit down and work the math. You need to be a millionaire. So everybody in here should have as a goal to be worth $1 million by, and you pick the date. Okay, probably a couple $1 million, depending how old you are, because of that little thing called inflation. Okay. So if you look on this and say, I need $1 million, this one actually says $100,000. I want $100,000 in 20 years. And it's, I think I can get 8% on my investment. How much do I need to put away each year? And what you do is you just kind of go down the column here to number 20 and then over to 8% and there's a little percentage there. And you multiply, and what you end up with is you need to put away $2,185.22 a year in order to reach $100,000. Okay? So you work the math, you can play around with this, and you can say, whoa, how much am I putting away right now for retirement? Maybe I'm not putting away as much as I think I should be putting away. If your company has a match, some of you people have a match. Now, if you put in a dollar, they'll put in a dollar, or they'll put in 50 cents. That's free money. Not only is it free right now, but you don't have to pay taxes on it now. You only have to pay taxes when you take it out, when you retire. Therefore, it's a very good thing. To max out on your company match program is a very smart, prudent thing to do. Unless you are planning on dying very young, okay? And if that's the case, I want to share with you my name and address so I can be in your will. Okay. So, the next is, so anyway, that's savings. And we're going to have Bill Smith here in a couple of weeks. And he's a senior vice president with a firm downtown. And he will talk to us for a whole week on how to make wise financial investments. And he has a number of insights that we don't have time right now, but I called him and chatted with him, wrote some of them down. But one of the things that he mentioned is pay yourself first. At the beginning, when you get your check, make sure that money's being automatically taken out, particularly if there's a match, and goes into your 401k, so you're planning towards the future. Okay. Now, Steve Carter, on the 22nd, is going to be here. And he's going to be talking about housing, and should we rent, should we buy? What are some of the things that go along with when you purchase a home? What are some things you can look for? And some of the things I have found, just a little bit, when you own a house, you also own a lawnmower and a weed whacker and a hammer and a leaf blower and a wheelbarrow and a rake and a spade and a shovel and a broom and a hose and mulch and fertilizer and grass seed and shears and curtains and vacuum cleaner. And houses are expensive. They don't just, it's not just that you get this mortgage, you get your taxes, which tend to go up, all right? This year, my wife said, our taxes have finally exceeded per month what we pay on our mortgage each month, okay? That may happen to you, okay? Just something to be aware of and to be thinking about, okay? When you buy your house, if you buy a new house, does it come with grass? You bought a house and you're shaking your head, yeah. Lo and behold, surprise. Okay, there's these little things. So Steve will be talking about that. Tell him your dad, I gave him a really big buildup, and he better be great. Okay. Another area that we're going to be talking about next week is on food. How can we save money on food? One of the most important things that we can do, and I don't want to steal too much of your thunder, but one of the things you have to do when you go to the store is, first you go at the end of the day when you're hungry, right? That's a good time to go. And don't take a shopping list because you kind of figure out what you want. And of course, don't make a menu during the week, because if you make a menu during the week, then you'll have an idea of maybe what you should have on your shopping list that you really want to adhere to very, very closely. Okay, that was all tongue-in-cheek for those of you who have no sense of humor. Okay. Clothing, you know, there are some art to buying clothes, okay? What you do is when you're in Nordstrom's, you weigh them against Brooks Brothers, right? You get a jacket, instead of $8.50 for a sports jacket, you could maybe get one for just, you know, $7.50, right? Isn't that a good deal? No, actually, I was in Kohl's the other day and I bought a pair of summer shorts for $8. They're usually $40. I felt so good. Why were they on sale for only $8? Right. You know, that's just a real logical little thing. At the end of the season, I'm not all that fashion conscious. You know, I try to wear socks that match. But, you know, beyond that, you know, it doesn't matter that much. So for me, it's okay to buy at the end of the season for next year. You know, there's a lot of little things that we can do. I talked to somebody this morning about, you know, she was telling me this, and she was dressed very nice, and she said, this cost me $3, and my shoes cost me $2. She goes to a thrift store. Okay? So more power to her. Anyway, we'll learn about some of the things on that next week. And then life insurance. The scriptures tell us that we're supposed to buy life insurance. Did you know that? This gentleman over here is going to be telling us all about insurance next week. And the scriptures tell us in 1 Timothy 5:8, if anyone does not provide for his relations, and especially for his immediate family, he has denied his father and is worse than an unbeliever. Our family, 1 Timothy 5:8, our family is counting on us. If we die, they're still counting on us. So it's to our advantage, to their advantage, for us to prepare for the worst case scenario so that they still are able to be well taken care of financially as once we're gone. Okay. Gary's also going to spend a whole week on getting out of debt. We won't go into that, but about credit and about going into debt and getting out of debt. I'll share this with you. And then we're going to do, Dan hopefully is going to do a thing on recreation. And one thing I wanted to share with you, and I'll do that and then we'll close, is my patients when I was a nurse, she shared something with me. Her name is Mrs. Tulliver. She's 53 years old. 53. She's an old lady. She's been married for 53 years. And I said, Mrs. Tulliver, you were married for 53 years. What was the secret to your marriage? She said these things. She said, never go to bed mad. Like that's going to happen. Okay. I love my wife. Okay. Say you love your husband or wife every day. Husband should buy flowers once a week. That's not a big expense, and it can go in your budget, okay? But it's so nice without the money. And have a date once a month. Now, she's a very poor lady. They did not have a lot. But they had a date, and it was just the two of them. And they had a whole boatload of kids. And the kids always knew mom and dad were going on a date. Recreation is important for it. It doesn't mean that you have to go and spend a whole bunch of money, like, you know, $15 at McDonald's or something. You can go and play volleyball together or go for a walk in the park and make it very romantic. There's all kinds of things that you can do, but it's important to have a date, just the two of you together, and this is our concentrated time. Okay. Remember I mentioned earlier that my wife and I walk around the block every night? That's really important to our marriage to make sure that we communicate. So recreation is important. It doesn't have to be expensive, but we have to think about it if we want to have an effective time together. Okay, so in conclusion, we need to find balance in our life. That's a very important thing. In the book Balancing Life Demands by Grant Howard, he said there's several things we have to do. Number one, make sure God and our relationship with Him is number one. Then make sure that the person that we're married to, that their relationship is the next priority, because if our relationship is on God and serving Him, that's going to impact upon our spouse. If our relationship with God is right and our relationship with our spouse is right, then our relationship with our kids is going to be okay. So God first, our spouse second, then we can concentrate on our kids. Then he said third, then you fourth, then you concentrate on your work. And if you can do your work okay, your relationship with God is in check, your relationship with your spouse, your relationship with your kid, then you're going to spend the right amount of time at work. And then, lastly, he says, is ministry. We all need to have ministry, but we need to make sure these other things all fall together first before we spend time serving the Lord. That's his take on it, and I think it's something for us to think about. Okay? Let's close in a word of prayer. Our Father in heaven, we thank you so very much that you have entrusted each and every one of us so very much. We thank you for the love that you give to us and the fact that we're able to be your ambassadors. We pray, Lord, that you'll help us to reach out to our friends and our fellow workers and other people in the city so that we can glorify you through all that we do. We pray, Lord, that this week we'll be able to think through some money things so that finances turns out to be a real asset to our life and to our relationship with you. In Christ's name, amen.